them faced a barrage of criticism for hosting 2022 World Cup. The Anglo-Saxon imperialist Zionist media went into overdrive, raising irrelevant issues that had nothing to do with soccer. Despite the initial outcry over non-availability of drinks inside the stadiums, as if it was a drinking competition, mercifully this has stopped. Regardless of the type of government in Qatar, it has done an admirable job showing hospitality, providing a safe environment, and presenting Islam in a positive manner. The World Cup in Qatar blown off the lid of negativity about Islam in the media. Ayman Mohiuddin, an MSNBC host, said the depth of Western prejudice, performative moral outrage, and perhaps most significantly, gross double standards, it is hypocritical of the West to give lessons on morality to others. The world's most viewed sporting event happens every 4 years, known as FIFA Soccer or Football World Cup. It is estimated that over 4 billion people have viewed the games. Qatar has taken the advantage of the World Cup to reach out to hundreds of thousands of visiting fans to explain the reality about Islam and remove people's misconceptions. Qatar is the first Muslim country to stage a soccer World Cup. Curious visitors have flocked to an array of grand mosques, interspersed with azan, the call to prayer. The Blue Mosque has attracted thousands of visitors, including soccer players from Argentina and Brazil. Outside the mosque, there are booklets in different languages explaining the teachings of Islam and the life of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Arabic coffee and dates are served to visitors. Islamic scholars patiently explain misconceptions about Islam and the Prophet that are so widespread among the people in the West. They are led to believe that Islam promotes radicalism. The booklets explain to people more about ethics, the importance of family bonding, and respect for mothers, neighbors, and non-Muslims. Numerous videos of visitors show admitting that their views on Islam and Muslims were tainted by unjustified prejudice projected by the Western media. Qatar has countered Islamophobia well, and according to social media posts, many people have embraced Islam during the visit to Doha. Islam, however, does not coerce people to convert. Moreover, many Muslims residing in Western countries have rediscovered their faith while attending the games in Qatar. The games are not about conversion or reversion to Islam. Rather, it is an opportunity to present an accurate picture of Islam. Qatar faced much criticism for not allowing drink sales inside the stadiums. Throughout the past weeks, the atmosphere has been friendly, calm, and peaceful without the hostility or violence associated with drinks. Qatar is a Muslim country. Alcoholic drinks are largely a Western addiction or obsession. It is not part of the sport. There are many countries that ban alcohol in stadiums, like France. Drink consumption contributes significantly to antisocial behavior like vandalism and mischief. Such harmful conduct has been experienced in Europe following every soccer game. What captured the world's attention and mesmerized the spectators was the recitation of the verses of the Noble Quran at the opening ceremonies. Sayings of the Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, and their English translations were hung on boards at various points around the stadiums, shopping malls, and commercial centers of Qatar. The billboard saying every good deed is a charity and save yourself from hellfire, even with half a date fruit in charity, were displayed in many places. Every seat in the stadium had a bag containing material about Islamic culture and Qatar. It was wise of Qatar to use one of the world's largest events to promote the message of Islam. Several Arab countries have normalized relations with the Zionist regime. Soccer fans and Muslims, however, have shown to the entire world by carrying Palestinian flag and wearing armband that they are with the Palestinians in their struggle against Zionist apartheid Israel. The show of solidarity shown by people of diverse ethnicities and nationalities with the Palestinian people raises much hope that the world has not abandoned the Palestinian cause. They sang, "With the spirit and blood, we will redeem you, O Palestine." This sympathy and support throws egg and pours cold water on the so-called Abraham Accords. There can be no normalization while Palestinians are killed by the occupying forces, their houses demolished, and they face daily humiliations. Brazil's coach Tite got emotional when talking to an Arab man draped in a Palestinian flag. He offered to carry his sleeping grandchild to the metro. The Arab said he sympathized with us and showed us humanity. While Morocco lost its bid to host 2026 World Cup, its win against Spain and then Portugal brought much cheer, taking it to the quarterfinals. It looks forward to hosting it in 2030. It will be its fifth attempt to host the World Cup. The South African Football Association, SAFA, has pledged its unqualified support for Morocco's bid to host 2030 World Cup, just as it supported it for 2026. One can expect much Islamophobic racism and peddling of the old myth that Africa does not have the capacity to host the Games. Morocco became the first Muslim country to reach the quarterfinals. Moroccan players and fans waving Palestinian flags shows their solidarity with Palestinians. This is a matter of pride for all Muslims. When Morocco defeated Portugal, players fell into prostration on the pitch at Al Thumama Stadium celebrating their victory. The sins of players falling into sajda or prostration spread like wildfire. It was discussed on many social media platforms. Many Westerners asked, why are Muslim players celebrating this? It is common to see football players celebrate by either sliding or dancing, or some players even jumping over each other. Cristiano Ronaldo, along with Lionel Messi, are known for their celebration to connect with fans. However, Muslim players often fall into prostration to connect with God as they score or gain victory. Prostration is the pinnacle of humility and grace.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome to yet another episode of Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we discuss your problems, questions that parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their children. The answers are based upon the Noble Quran and narrations from Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him and his purified family. Imam Ali al-Islam says, know the importance of your youth before you get old, and know the importance of your old age before you get ill. Now, how you can help your adolescents to know the importance of their youth? You got to educate them about the changes that are happening in their bodies. And to know more on the topic, today in our studio, we have with us our special guest, Professor Salman Nakavi, who is a faculty member of Al Mustafa University and a researcher in the Hawza Ilmi of Qom. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome, sir.
Thank you very much.
Well, Professor Nakavi, we have been talking about the changes that take place in adolescence, and you said there are so many changes. There are biological changes, there are hormonal changes, there are physical changes, there are mental changes that take place in the life of an adolescent. But you as a parent should help the adolescent to educate about these changes. And also the important part with education is to help them in management of these changes. What else?
I would emphasize upon the importance for the development of the intellectual aspect of the child, so that he or she at that age, at the age of adolescence, because he or she is becoming a complete adult. Of course, we have two levels. One level is called bulugh in Arabic, the stage of puberty, where it becomes obligatory for a child to carry out these the responsibilities, not just the prayers and the ritualistic things. No, everything becomes necessary. All things which are wajib in Islam have to be observed. Or everything which is haram has to be refrained from. But there's a higher level that is called rushd.
Growth.
Rushd is a level where one's intellectual faculties become complete.
Okay.
He becomes a reasonable person. Therefore, in many countries, for example, the age for giving a driving license is 18.
Yeah.
Or even one is able to vote at the age of 18.
Yeah.
18 is considered to be a time where a person is now capable of making decisions on his own.
Independent decisions.
I mean, it's not necessarily 18. It could be before that, could be after that. Some children develop very quickly. They can become of that age at a very, even maybe at the time of puberty, if their development has taken place properly. But that rushd, and that is the way one a person is capable to make his independent decisions. He can start a family life. He can manage his own way of earning his own living. He's expected to do things which he can become independent. In the West, in many countries, you see children at the age of 18, they start moving out of the parents' houses.
Yeah.
So that level, when one wants to achieve that level, of course, we should try to get to that level in regarding our children when they become 15 or whatever the age of puberty is. But it may extend beyond that. And in that period, the intellectual development is very important. being able to make the right decisions is very important.
Yeah.
Therefore, this has to be worked upon, whether it is at school or whether it is at the home. They should complement each other. Intellectual development, awareness of our surroundings, awareness of one's own faculties, understanding what the world is about, going into the issues which are very, very complex maybe. And this understanding, I mean, for example, a person studies mathematics or philosophy or logic, things which engage, make his pure reasoning
very strong.
Very strong. Pure reasoning where one can depend on one's intellect and make decisions through pure reasoning. And after that, of course, application of that pure reasoning. Both are important.
Yeah. We'll discuss more on that, Professor Nagavi, after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned with us.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm Zainab with Professor Nagavi, and we're discussing about the changes in adolescence. Professor Nagavi, before going to the break, you said you would rather suggest parents in these all these changes to have most of their focus on the reasonable aspect of their child.
I mean, basically, the hadith says, Al-aql ma yu'badu bihi ar-Rahman. Intellect is the faculty that Allah Almighty has given to human beings. And through this faculty, human beings are able to be the...
reach proximity.
To achieve the proximity of Allah Almighty. They can become the servants, the true servants of Allah Almighty, obedient servants to Allah Almighty. So the important thing is, again, as I said, I reinforce what I said before, Islam does not want to enforce and impose any sort of belief on human beings. Actually, it wants to say that you have to understand what is the truth. قَدْ تَبَيَّنَ الرُّشْدُ مِنَ الْغَيِّ فَمَنْ يَكْفُرْ بِالطَّاغُوتِ وَيُؤْمِنْ بِاللَّهِ فَقَدْ اسْتَمْسَكَ بِالْعُرْوَةِ الْوُثْقَى. It's where it says in the Ayatul Kursi, لَا إِكْرَاهَ فِي الدِّينِ. Deen, with regards to religion, nothing can be imposed. But the difference...
with logic.
Yes?
With logic.
The truth, the path of hidayah, of rushd, of growth and true development has become distinguished and separated from the path of deviance. And this قَدْ تَبَيَّنَ, and it has become clear through our thinking,
yeah,
and understanding. Therefore, Islam does not want to enforce anything, but it wants us to understand the truth, and that Allah Almighty is the absolute truth. So the intellect has to be developed in such a way that one really understands the whole concept of Tawheed, His absolute being, Allah being the absolute truth, and everything is under that. Everything comes follows after that. My feelings, my actions have to be managed and controlled under the umbrella of that truth. So intellectual development plays a very important role. And this cannot be left for later years. It has to start before puberty. It has to continue. And it has to be enforced, especially at this in the age of adolescence. Studying subjects which give us that proper understanding is important. About our beliefs, about our morals, about our principles, about our worldview. All of them have to be thought about, understood, and this is the age where it has to be done. Therefore, whether it is at home, whether it is at the school, high school, where children are now becoming prepared to go to higher studies, or if they don't go to higher studies, they want to go into the marketplace to start earning, whether it is that or that, in both cases, a person, a salih person, a competent person, a person who is competent enough to carry out his duties, and we shall discuss about the four aspects which are there, which we have been talking about. That is the groundwork that has to be
done before dying
at that age.
Yeah, we'll discuss more on that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned with us.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "Raise your children to have three features: love for your Prophet, love for his household, and reciting the Quran."
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I am Zainab with Professor Nakawi, and we're discussing about the changes that take place at the age of adolescence. Well, Professor Nakawi, before going to the break, you said it's very, very important to give focus on the reasonable aspect, because through reasoning, one can reach the highest levels of proximity or achieve proximity, and one has to understand the truth. And basically, you as a parent, when you're teaching your adolescent before puberty, all those things, and you're developing his intellectual level by the age of adolescence to a level where he understands the ultimate truth as Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and does not get overexcited with whatever he sees and is able to manage everything, you're basically helping the upcoming generations. You're basically guiding and upbringing them.
Exactly. So it applies what a great deal of learning the parents have to do. I mean, if you want your children to learn properly and reach to higher levels of excellence and perfection, you need to be at a stage where you can take them along with you.
Yeah.
And if unfortunately the case is not so as it is in many households, due to a lot of reasons, poverty is there, many things, social issues are there which impede the growth of society. And one of the reasons that we are not progressing properly as humanity as a whole, especially third world countries, Muslim countries, most of them lack behind in many things, because the opportunities to grow are not there. The opportunities have to be provided. We can't enforce anything. We have to provide a conducive atmosphere, whether it is the state, whether it is the learning institute that a child goes to, the school, the college, whether it is at home. All of them should be focused upon, number one, intellectual development, number two, emotional development, number three, physical development, and based on this, ideological development, and the ethical and moral values that have to be inculcated, and which then manifest themselves in the actions which are required of from a human being, a competent Muslim, and then he has to or she has to manage the four relationships which are the basic elements of a pure life. The pure life that Allah wants us to live is under the umbrella of Tawheed, recognizing him to be the ultimate truth, and to manage all our affairs, all our actions, based on those pure intentions in life, with oneself, with Allah Almighty in the specific sense, ibadah, and then with other human beings, and then even with the environment. So this has to be developed. I believe that adolescence is the very important step in this development. That is the time where all our efforts, which started from the time that the child came into this world, till the time now he or she wants to become an adult and an independent person, this final stage is the most important stage, in the sense that that is the final thing that a parent can do. Beyond that, there's nothing which can the parents can expect to do.
Yeah, so it's very, very important that you're saying that it is the final stage, not the beginning stage, because that's how it's misunderstood, and that's how things become very, very difficult for parents with their adolescence. It's because they think that adolescence is the beginning age, while as for you, you're saying that it's not the beginning stage. It may be the final stage. Thank you so much, Professor Nagavi, for being with us. Thank you so much, dear listeners, for being with us. In case you want to listen to our programs, please go back to our official website, which is www.parstoday.com. You can go to the tab, Call of Islam, and find our programs out there. And in case you want to search us on the social media platforms, just type Call of Islam Radio. In case you have any questions, queries, or issues, you can feel free to share with us on our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir. With that, we end our today's session. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space returned upon rest.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and let us ponder on a beautiful statement from the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him. Often your utterances and expressions of your face reveal the secrets of your hidden thoughts.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
minutes.
In early December, the French government announced a new health measure. Young people in France will have free access to condoms from January in a bid to minimize the spread of sexually transmitted infections. Emmanuel Macron said young people would be able to collect them from pharmacies and described the move as a small revolution in prevention. In 2020 and 2021, France experienced a 30% national increase in sexually transmitted infections rates, prodding the authorities into action. Yet some say there are much more important things at stake, especially when it comes to women, that must be the government's overriding priority. That said, SITs are taking a heavy toll on French citizens, especially French women.
These sexually transmitted infections can have serious health consequences. For example, these infections can cause infertility, adverse pregnancy outcomes, and also adverse birth outcomes, such as stillbirth, neonatal death, and low birth weight.
France has long been patting itself on the back for giving women free contraceptives and allowing them to abort at will, under the name of defending women's rights. But aren't all these measures much ado about nothing, targeting hearth and home in the long run? The fact is, the image France is trying to give of itself as an ideal place for being a woman is a distorted version of reality. Behind the attractive facades lies piles of horrible stories with women playing the role of victims. In late November, an appalling crime left residents of a French town in a state of shock after the rape and murder of a 40-year-old girl in the south of the country, weeks after the brutal killing of yet another 12-year-old girl in Paris. No wonder how vulnerable girls would be in a country where boys fall victim to sexual predators at an alarming rate. In early November, a priest working in northwest France was charged after being accused of drugging and raping a 50-year-old boy. Back in January, the French Interior Ministry released shocking figures, revealing that instances of sexual violence in 2021 increased by 33% from the previous year. The crime figures not only revealed that instances of sexual violence, rape, attempted rape, sexual harassment, and sexual assault jumped 33% from the previous year, but that physical assaults rose from the third year in a row. In fact, French women and girls are also the prime targets for domestic violence. In late January, a 28-year-old woman was found strangled to death in her apartment in Paris. Her partner and killer was a police officer who had previously been convicted on domestic abuse charges. In 2020, there were in total approximately 213,000 women who suffered physical or sexual violence from their spouse or former spouse. While the treatment of women has come under scrutiny through campaigns like the Me Too movement, domestic violence has been overlooked as the bruises of domestic abuse are less visible. Meanwhile, considered one of the worst crimes that can be committed, child abuse is rampant in France. In 2018, more than 23,500 minors were victims of sexual violence. Incest is also much more widespread than expected. In 2020, it was estimated that 6.7 million people had been subjected to incest during their lives, and 32% of French people said they had incest victims in their circle. Moreover, the killings of three women on the first day of 2022 evoked massive outcry over France's growing problem of femicide. Activists have criticized the government's inability to rein in deadly domestic violence. In 2021 alone, 113 women were killed by men who were in most cases their male partners or ex-partners. While Macron's government is going to hand out free condoms, self-praising the move as a small revolution in prevention, French women are exposed to the severest acts of violence that may cost even their lives. In the name of freedom, the French authorities have left women alone, vulnerable in the face of domestic violence and sexual abuse. French society needs more than a small revolution in the prevention of crimes that hit women as the guardians of families and family values.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Salaamu Alaikum. Welcome to this episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. I invite you to be with us, because today we're going to speak about the behavior and social interaction of a believer.
I pray to God, my heart, soul, and body, every single day of my life, with every breath. I solemnly promise to try to live my life for you. Oh Allah, you did revive my soul and shone your light into my heart. So please leave you, is now my only goal. Oh, I love you so, I love you so.
Today, Tuesday, is the 25th of Jamadil Awal, 1444 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 29th of Azar, 1401 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 20th of December, 2022 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. Inshallah, we're going to learn more about verse 68 of the chapter Al-Furqan from the Holy Quran.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم والذين لا يدعون مع الله إلها آخر ولا يقتلون النفس التي حرم الله إلا بالحق ولا يزنون ومن يفعل ذلك يلقى أثاما.
And those who do not invoke with Allah another deity or kill the soul which Allah has forbidden to be killed except by right, and do not commit unlawful sexual intercourse. And whoever should do that will meet a penalty.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
Ma lana rabbun siwa.
In this verse, polytheism, murder, and adultery, which are of the greatest sins in narrations, are mentioned. Anyway, the sixth attributes of the true servants of the Beneficent, Allah, that is mentioned in the verse under discussion, is sincere monotheism, which is free from any polytheism and multi-worshipping. The light of monotheism has illuminated all of their heart and their personal social life, and the darkness and gloom of polytheism is no longer in the thought and soul of theirs.
My life is not the same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I when I have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know, amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. You are the light that guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong in a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you.
This week, during the series of this program, Today's Special, we have looked at the behavior and social interaction of a believer. We continue that. Some people claim that their character is simply what they are born with, and there is nothing they can do to change or adjust it. This is simply not true. Much of the driving force behind one's character has to do with what one believes about Allah, this life, the hereafter, and so on. Thus the Prophet said, piety and righteousness is being of good character. Piety is achievable, but it may take some effort. In fact, when the Messenger of Allah described the hypocrites, those of weak and false faith, he described them by their actions and behavior. Lying while speaking, breaking one's trust, and so on. Once again, the example par excellence for the behavior of a Muslim is found in the Prophet. By the grace and mercy of Allah, Allah sent the Prophet, a human being who was a husband, father, member of society, leader of society, and so forth, to exemplify for the believers who one should behave in a manner that is pleasing to Allah.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The topic of our discussion today is about the code of conduct for a Muslim. There are many other features and, let's say, characteristics that are expected from the follower of the school of Ahlul Bayt, alayhim as-salam, to have, actually, some other codes of conduct that actually one expects the follower of the school of Ahlul Bayt to have. But depending on the time that we are here with you, I just want to refer to some of the most important ones. but that of asceticism and simple life that a Muslim is expected to have is that since the attachment to the world and its belongings hinders the achievements of true perfection, the good men of God always have asceticism, as zuhd, and contentment in their plans and in their lives, and their simple lives. Meaning that avoiding the worldly manifestations and not liking worldly manifestations and glamour. So it does not mean that a person, a Muslim, or let's say a person who is going to base his acts on the actions and the behavior of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi Muslim is going to be a secular person. No, it's not. I mean, Islam doesn't want us to be, to have a secular life and to be away from all worldly affairs. No, we are asked just to not to be attached to the worldly desires. So, that is a true follower of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam have learned the beautiful character of asceticism and simple lives from those dear ones, that is the infallible imams.
Special topics for a special program. You can listen today, now and here, IRIB English Radio. Today's special.
Let's learn about Muslim code of behavior. Patience. Yes, be patient. We start complaining without realizing how much we have been blessed with. Our tolerance level has decreased and we always want the best of everything. However, we must learn to be content with what we have. We should learn to be patient in times of difficulty and learn how to handle every situation calmly. Life isn't perfect and it can't be perfect. There are good times and there are bad times. Despite being the most dearest to Allah, our beloved Prophet Muhammad had to face a lot of difficult times. It is important that we remain patient and always thank Allah in both situations. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to today's special from IRIB English Radio. And as you know, the topic of this episode is the behavior and social interaction of a believer. So because of that, we'll look at one of the important social behaviors, that is caring of others, orphans, and destitute in particular. Orphans deprived of tender, loving parental attention are entitled to the utmost care and consideration in Muslim society. The Prophet Muhammad declared that in paradise, those who have cared for orphans will remain in close proximity to him, the Prophet. He illustrated this by holding together two fingers of one hand to demonstrate that they would never find themselves further away from him than those two fingers. It is the duty of a guardian to employ the utmost diligence to safeguard the rights and property of orphans under her or his protection. Allah tells us in the Holy Quran, in chapter 4, verse 10, those who unjustly consume the property of orphans ingest the fire that will soon envelop them. With good deeds balanced against bad, we are led to understand that jealousy consumes good deeds in the same way that fire consumes wood. Thus, usurping the property of an orphan is described as ingesting fire rather than food.
This is the work of the shaitan who keeps telling me every single day, you are better than others because you come from this culture, from this country. This is racism. There is no country better than other countries. In the eyes of God, all the land is equal. No geographic area is favorable by God. God never said this geographic area is better because you are born in this geographic area, you are closer to me than that person who are born in that geographic area. When it comes to God, the whole universe is equal. Wherever you are born, you are number one in the eyes of God. You are his favorite servant if you have piety. It doesn't matter where you are born. It doesn't matter about the blood in your veins. God does not look at the blood in our veins. God never looks at the color of our skin. God does not judge us by our accents or language or culture. He doesn't. Racism is a disease. Many Muslims today, they embrace racism today. Because I'm coming from this country, I'm superior to others. Najad, my race is better than others because I am born on this land. This is a disease. We have to fight this disease. A day that I can rise above these differences. A day that I can see myself equal with others, not better than them. A day that I do not mention my father and my grandfather and my family and my race and my family tree and my color or my culture or my language. I don't see myself, I am above others because of these. That day I become a good Muslim, a true Muslim, a humble Muslim.
That was all from today's special. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode of today's special by IRIB English Radio. Till then, we leave you in Allah's protection. Fi amanillah.
Nothing who you're looking for. Stop doing what you're doing, cause there is no hope. Just come with me, I'll show you what's behind your door. And they showed me all kind of lies. My eyes were locked, yes I was mesmerized. But deep inside I know that there's a better world. Cause I'm a believer, I'm a believer.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you.